Hello and welcome to Hawk Surfer Show, a whirlwind ride through whatever we want. I'm your host this week, Galen.
And I'm your co-host, Matt, and we have no more time. We have to go straight into this. We have a trailer blazes for Pal World.
Oh my god.
Trailer blazes! Yeehaw! Okay, we're just gonna start watching it here. We're watching it live. There's yep. Lucario.
Yep, there's Pikachu. There's
Zoroark? Really?
Zoroark, Giratina?
They're so, like, unabashed with these designs.
Yep. Also, the...
Okay, we're okay, surfing we and shooting. We got a bazooka.
Yep.
Bowser?
Oh my god, it's Bowser?
They just put Bowser in the game?
Farming. The main character has very Horizon Zero Dawn energy.
Aloy.
They got a dog, which is very good. Some pretty cute Pokemons. I mean, not Pokemon. Big Whale Man.
They're like, so Pokemon, though. Oh, hey, it's
this
Monstat.
Is very Pokemon.
Sled Dogs?
Oh, I love Sled Dogs.
Sled
oh.
Dog Millionaire?
What? Oh, what? There's like a Nessie that has missiles strapped to it.
That shot had to have been like so on purpose.
Yeah.
Like it went from like the Quagsire head down and then it pans down to show the missiles. It's like, we know how wild this juxtaposition is.
Okay, they're mining. They've been showing boss battles, which look kind of cool. The big like hyper beam attack.
Hold
on
a bunch
of enemies.
Was that like a cannon? Oh, it's literally called Anubis. Was that like a cannon that shot out Pokeballs? That's actually kind of nifty.
Yeah. And they fly into the logo Pal World, and it's a bunch of the new designs.
God, yeah. So much of that just looked like existing Pokemon.
Yeah, this was... Okay.
Like, sure, the Anubis isn't exactly a hard design to come up with, because it's based off the actual Anubis.
Yes.
And like, that's what Lucario is. It's a jackal based roughly off Anubis.
I'll give them Anubis. However, the one that looks like Zoroark mixed with the legendaries from Black and White, that one is absolutely on the nose.
Yeah. Not to mention, like, just a lot of the smaller ones as well look way too close to a Pokemon.
Yeah, the little dog looks way too close to the electric dog that was in the Sword Shield.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously like the Wooloo and like the little chipmunk guy that looks like the electric chipmunk, Pikachu, the other one.
It looks like Pokemon fusion specifically.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
there's like a Lilligant Dragonite fusion a few times.
The whale, the big whale that they ride on has like the Arceus spikes.
Yeah.
The Arceus fence.
The Arceus halo.
Yeah, it really is like somebody played polymerization onto random Pokemon that were, you know, kind of similar.
I mean, I love, like, Pokemon fusion ROM hacks and fan art and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
But part of that's just because it's Pokemon, and it's a lot about, like, interpreting the source material. But, like, this feels much more, I don't know, shameless than that? Like, this doesn't feel like fan art or fan work.
Yeah. It's not... it is a real product that they are going to attempt to sell. Probably successfully, I might add. I'm definitely going to pick this up.
I know, yeah. It's like, the marketing is at least working on how bizarre it is.
Yeah, the one moment that we both freaked out at of, like, the Pokemon that looks like a little guy. It's like a little guy version of Lapras.
It's Lapras fused with Quagsire.
Yeah, and then it pans down and they have missiles.
Hidden missiles. I can't get over the Bowser. It just looks like dry Bowser, maybe.
It really does. It looks... I'm fairly certain that's an exact attack that, like, a Bowser fight has used in, like, I don't know, 3D World or something.
Yeah, or, like, it's his down smash? Not his down smash. It's like his down smash. Or it's, like, the way he looks in Bowser's Fury.
Yes.
Bowser's Fury. We have another trailer blazes here, which is not going to be real time the way the Pal World React was.
Yes. There was too much to catch up on for Sonic Frontiers.
Yeah. So Sonic, friend of the show, Sonic Frontiers,
yeah.
one of our reoccurring characters along with Pal World. There's been a few trailers since we last talked about it, and especially since we last recorded. But, like, so the trailers, they kind of give a more complete view of what the game is going to be now.
Yes, yes.
And it looks even more like Sonic of the Wild.
Yes, I will say, it looks, I think now, so, like, we also jumped the gun, much like everybody else, with the first trailer of, like, it's Sonic of the Wild. Because the first trailer, part of what made it look so, oh god, this is going to suck, is the fact that it looked like a default Unity map that they, like, sprinkled some random other Unity assets to, and then there was Sonic there. And that was kind of a big, like, criticism, essentially.
For me, it was not just, like, the world design, but also, like, the part where he goes up a tower, and at the top of the tower, there's a thing that you do.
Yeah, yeah. And the now that we have more gameplay, now that we have more to look at, it definitely seems more accurate to say Sonic of the Wild.
Yeah, like, they show levels, like, they look like Sonic Generations levels, or, you know, that style of boost 2D, 3D hybrid. But then, like, they show the overworld, and the overworld has a few different biomes, and that's fun and all. They kind of remind me of, like, Talos Principle or Serious Sam biomes.
Yeah.
But then it's, like, there's a overview trailer from a few weeks ago where they actually have somebody kind of giving a voiceover about the mechanics, and it's, like, you can enter these portals to challenge different challenges and complete them to get keys. And it's like, oh, they're shrines. Okay, 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 I see.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay, shrines. We have big guys to climb up, much like the Shadow of the Colossus comparison.
Sonic of the Colossus.
Sonic of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus is where he goes, damn.
Where's that damn 13th Colossus? This is just like killing a tiny boar colossus, which is fine by me.
Yep, yep.
You know what they say, the fewer the merrier. So, yeah, we've got shrines. We have, which I think are, I assume is what's going to be the, like, boost 2D, 3D levels,
mm-hmm.
Is just, like, those are the shrines, so it's sort of like a half measure between the open world and, hey, do you remember the other gameplays?
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the best way to do it, I suppose. The best way to try and transition it is like, no, there's also the levels that you like, but also open world. There's still the Pokemon Ranger Circle thing is still seems to be one of the primary mechanics.
Yeah. They call it the Psyloop, which sounds like some sort of gaming infrastructure.
Yeah. The Psyloop is like the newest, like, cooling system for gaming PCs.
Yeah. Or I was thinking it's like a launcher for all of the Psy Games products.
Ah, yes.
Like, you could play Granblue and Shadowverse using the Psyblue. The Psyloop.
The Psyblue.
Psyblue. That's Sonic's new color scheme. They showed a bit of the story. There's a little robot kid. Amy and Tails are kidnapped. Sonic kind of morbs out and his arm goes all glitchy, so that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Knuckles is, I guess, just not present because we never get any mention of him.
Yeah, they literally just said Sonic is exploring cyberspace with Amy and Tails.
Yeah, yeah.
Presumably to stop the hacker and save Motherboard.
Which was a fun reference that you made while watching the trailer as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, okay. So, Sonic Team, if you're listening, I got a great idea for you, since you've clearly forgotten Knuckles exists. What if Knuckles was in the game, but, hit this, he was a bad guy, because he was tricked by Eggman, or whoever the big bad is. Also, there's no Eggman. he was tricked by whoever the big bad is into thinking that Sonic is a bad guy now. Wouldn't that be kind of cool, huh?
I'm trying to think of, like, there is no Spoon, but there is no Eggman. But I haven't watched The Matrix in so long that I can't think of a way to word it.
My favorite activity at the fair is the Spoon-Eggman race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You know what they say, the more the merrier.
have to finish fast.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. But hey, Sakurai says it's good.
Oh, goodness. So.
Yeah. Also, by the way, yeah, Sakurai is a YouTuber now.
Oh, yeah.
I like that he's like, all right, I'm done with Smash Bros. I can retire and become a YouTuber.
Yeah.
It's my dream.
You know, usually when, like, you know, titans of the industry sort of continue their life, eventually they reach a period where they get washed up and, you know, do like, random things. And I'm really happy to see that Sakurai has decided to skip the washed up part and just become a YouTuber.
Yeah. It'd be really funny if Miyamoto also became a YouTuber, but was just, like, a food reviewer or something.
Yes! Oh my god. Hello, it's me, Miyamoto. My secret dream this entire time has always been to review Roblox toys.
Konbanwa, running on empty desk.
So, yeah.
So that's what's going on in the world. I have some memes I want to talk about.
Yes, we're getting to a very special episode of meme of State of the Meme.
Okay, so this first one, I want to go over quickly because it's quick and a little less, like, there's less explanation needed, but I've come to realize that the Blue Album is, like, a pretty solid meme. Specifically, the album cover of Weezer's The Blue Album.
Yes.
And I think it's wild because in some ways it feels like it became a meme independent of the music. Like, on one hand, it is notable because it's a Weezer album. But it feels like a lot of the humor around the Blue Album meme is, like, separate from Weezer's music.
Yeah.
Like, they're just kind of four guys.
Which is, I believe, the subhead of Weezer the band, actually. Yeah.
It's just kind of four guys. Like, I mean, I've seen for a few years a bunch of different, like, edits and replacements of it. I saw one with the Impractical Jokers instead of Weezer. But I feel like recently there's been even more. I saw one that replaced, what is it, Aerosmith in Rock and Roller Coaster with Weezer. And it was like, wow, these updates to Disney have gotten really weird.
That's pretty good. I feel like the line of meme, essentially, the state of being a cultural artifact to becoming more of a meme is essentially kind of like Weezer exists at the dawn of time. Weezer exists.
Mm-hmm.
They make the Blue Album. Weezer gains a reputation of being like a band of guys.
They have some radio hits.
Oh, they have some radio hits. I think the like. If you are not in tune with music, the cultural perception is sort of like they're quote-unquote lame, but secretly everybody likes their music.
Kind of. I mean, they're kind of like a lot of other like 90s, early 2000s alt bands, like Everclear, Eve 6, Third Eye Blind, you know, stuff like that, where it's just kind of like guys being vulnerable for once.
Yeah.
And then there's the song, and they have a few whack songs, but like Beverly Hills was a hit. That's like one of their most like approachable songs, I guess. But I think really Blue Album became a meme when their cover album released.
Yes.
With the cover of Africa specifically. I feel like that was when people started to get tired of Weezer, much in like the same way people are tired of Imagine Dragons. But to the extent that it circled back around into ironic memedom, much yeah. In the same way people make memes about, like, oh, the misery, because it has become so pervasive that you have to react to it even though you don't like it.
Yeah. I think another big thing here is TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok is where a lot of memes currently spread, and the punchline of Weezer is pretty popular. I know for a while there was like a lot of different things where like, you know, on TikTok there would be like a duet this with your hardest riff, or like, you know, duet this with your sickest, you know, beat or, you know, rhymes or whatever. And, like, the punchline would be that, like, they play the first four notes of Buddy Holly.
Mm.
And so, like, it's this sort of, like, you know, the cultural perception goes from, like, oh yeah, Weezer, to, I'm tired of Weezer, to, Weezer is funny. And if you don't have as much context, you really just kind of get Weezer is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so Weezer itself becomes something of a punchline. And a big part of that is the Blue Album is extremely iconic and very easy to sort of replicate in a... It's a perfect, like, intersection of does not require that much effort to make into, like, a punchline, but requires just enough effort that, like, it's funny when you see an edit that
yeah.
looks like it.
I do think Weezer as a band is kind of funny in a weird way. Besides their name, it's like their songs range from, like, really good to just, like, whatever El Scorcho is. And I don't know, there's something weirdly relatable about that in a way.
Yeah.
That not all of their stuff is high concept, not all of their stuff is, like, kind of just whatever, like, kind of frat boy lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, it really has this range, and I think that contributes to the comedy of just four guys on the cover of the album.
Yeah. It's I will admit, I like quite a few Weezer songs. Like,
oh, yeah,
this is,
sure.
This discussion is essentially divorced from the quality of Weezer the band.
Yeah.
Like, I think most people quite enjoy one or two Weezer songs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I like most of, like, their first three or four albums up through Ratitude. But yeah, I just think it's funny, and I feel like we're kind of at the point where you can be aware of the Blue Album meme and not listen to a single Weezer song, much less, like, a song from that album specifically, and it would still be funny.
Yeah. I think one of my favorites was, like, somebody made a kind of pixel arty bedroom-looking thing, but on the wall was a very identifiable, mostly blue square with, like, just enough pixels to, like, It's that level of abstraction of, like, loss level abstraction where you just get a couple colors and you go, God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the other one is really important because it determines the fate of the internet. This is Reagan Sweep.
Yes.
So, okay, Reagan Arataka from Mob Psycho 100. Great character. He's a con man who pretends to be an exorcist to get money. And then when confronted with the fact that ghosts are real, and psychic powers are real, and he's actually, like, helpless to stop them on his own, he turns into sort of a mentor and helps guide the main character Mob through, growing up. Mob Psycho's a very coming-of-age story. And Reagan learns to be more honest and nice through Mob. It's a mutually beneficial arrangement. Anyways, so with that being said, there was a poll for hottest anime DILF.
Yes.
And there was another one at the... hottest anime twink. That's right.
Nice.
And Reagan won both of them. And, like, twink is whatever. I do actually agree that Gintoki from Gintama should have won hottest anime DILF. Or maybe, like, there's probably others. There's probably somebody from, like, FMA who would have been better. Mustang. But anyways, so Reagan won both of those. And these were, I want to say, just Twitter polls
yeah.
where anyone can vote. But then there was also a hottest anime MILF poll, and Reagan won that. I don't think these were, like, people voted in who their characters were, and then those were put onto the poll. I have to imagine the poll creator put it there because Reagan won the twink and the DILF polls.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, this would be funny. And it was. And then there was a Tumblr sexy man poll, which is a whole episode we would do, really.
God,
we
yeah.
We can't explain the concept of a Tumblr sexy man on our own.
I
recommend watching Sarah Zed's video on the Onesler if you're interested. She also talks about Nagito Komeda. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
And,
But speaking of...
But yeah, but so what's fantastic is the finals were Reagan Arataka versus Sans, and Sans won by 0.01%. Like, literally, it was 50 0.01 to 49.99.
Have you ever seen that movie of where the president of the United States is decided by exactly one person? I'm fairly certain that that exact situation happened regarding the Tumblr sexy man. There was like one 13-year-old in New Jersey who didn't vote.
Yeah. They were like, please vote for Sands. And Reagan sweep, of course, was the hashtag alluding to Morbius sweep, which was the call for Morbius to win every Oscar. People started making fan art of Reagan and Sands, and they're dating now.
Good.
That's good. I don't know. It's just really fun. The classic internet thing is to ruin any sort of poll or user input, you know? Like, apparently there's a poll or a contest for naming a probe to the planet Uranus. And I've heard people be like, they're just doing it because they know people are going to make fun of it anyways. They might as well let people have their fun.
Yeah.
And there was, like, Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
Which was surveyor expedition boat that eventually was named the SS David Attenborough.
Which I will say is a crime, but the SS Bodie McBoatface is perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And there's just, like, all those, like, Mountain Dew flavor pulls that got rated by 4chan. And, like, this is just a thing that will happen, but I think there's something even funnier that this is a con man character who is, like, in-universe known for being a very fast talker, but not being very good at much else. And he has somehow convinced people that he is not only a twink and a dilf,
but also a MILF.
And a Tumblr sexy man. Which, I don't really have any knowledge of his presence on Tumblr, but compare that to, like, I don't know, Sherlock Holmes, the Onceler, Eridon.
Eridon. Probably a couple other Homestucks in there, honestly.
Nagito, as we mentioned. Honestly, it should have been Sans and Nagito, just so everyone could post the videos of them dancing together.
Yeah. If you don't know why I said speaking of Nagito with regards to it being Sans, good. You don't need to know.
Everyone started talking about Reagan liking specific body parts up his bum, if you will.
We're
very off the rails right now. I don't think there's much else news. There is a Nintendo Direct that everyone called the Farm Direct, and I'm looking at my YouTube recommendations, and there's a Vinny thumbnail with Aonuma and Koizumi, the current president of Nintendo of Japan, and they're they're in like farmer getup. There's a lot of cottage core RPGs.
Yeah, we're going to be discussing the Nintendo Direct pretty Nintendo directly
and fairly quickly.
But this is the part where this becomes a very special episode. So a major news event happened very recently.
Yes.
You probably know what I'm talking about.
It's going to be in the title.
Yeah. It regards the Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say right here is a bit of a cutoff. This is a topic that, like, I'm not going to, like, start doom spiraling on, but I have a lot of very serious things I genuinely want to say. This is not a standard state of the meme thing, essentially. And so, like, this is going to be not necessarily a downer, but, like, this is going to be much more serious than what we standardly talk about. If you aren't in the mood for that, or you plainly don't care that much, which either is honestly perfectly fair, please head to this timestamp.
43:15.
Okay, so the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II, died on September 15th. I think it was over a week ago, actually.
Yeah, it was September's, the 10th or 9th.
Yeah.
I think it was the 10th specifically.
Yeah.
Because there was a joke about if it had happened one day later.
Yes. So, with regards to talking about tragedies in meme culture, I am going to lay it on the table right here. I am not going to make a joke on this episode about the Queen of England dying. I want to specify that's not because I think people shouldn't make jokes about it. I think people should. But I'm doing this just because if this is like the one really serious moment we get on this show, essentially, I want this to be the kind of thing where if somebody listens to it, they can like completely take it seriously, essentially. Like, I do not think that memeing the Queen's death is bad, and I'm about to start arguing why, but I myself am not going to make fun of it for the purpose of showing that I want this to be a respectable discussion, quote-unquote, over the topic.
Yes, we are trying to set the tone of this current discussion.
Yes.
However, I've already liked on Twitter jokes about the Queen's death, so...
Yes.
Like, if you want to know our stance, then that's a pretty good way to tell.
Yeah, yeah. I very much have also liked and probably retweeted a couple of jokes about it as well. So, okay. I think that the big question for people who are not into meme culture and who might look at that and be like, why this is so disrespectful, is essentially... Why are young people, mostly young people, some older people, memeing the Queen's death? And I really think that even beyond the political arguments of it, the history of colonialism of Great Britain, the acts of colonialism that the Queen herself was essentially complicit in during her rule, despite people... Well, first of all, going to just say there's a general hypocrisy that people are pointing out of people who defend the Queen, where on either the Queen is, you know, either the royalty is entirely just, you know, a powerless unit that's just there for tourism, or they're, you know, they have some power and therefore we should be applauding the Queen for the acts that she did to dismantle colonialism. Pick a lane. You cannot have it both ways. Either they are powerless, and thus all of the acts that she couldn't have done anything about, quote-unquote, she is at fault for, or they have power, and thus, same exact thing, she could have actively stopped any of the examples of colonialism that she didn't. But... moreover than even that, I feel like the biggest thing here is the generation that is mostly attuned online is a generation that has never seen benefits from the things that we are supposed to respect. What I mean by that is a very similar thing happened when, like, David Koch died or when George H.W. Bush died, where people immediately, instead of, like, giving time to grieve, quote-unquote, started immediately talking about how, hey, remember all of the terrible things that these people did? Remember Rush Limbaugh, you know, and how he shaped the face of radio, quote-unquote, but in, like, a very terrible, negative way? That's, like, that is the legacy that the people who have not, like, experienced any of the, quote-unquote, benefits of it immediately start talking about. And, like, again, I fully support that because the point I'm trying to make here is people say that, you know, the people who want us to respect great national tragedies like this essentially say, like, you know, well, you can disagree, you can, you know, believe this, this, and this about the British Empire, but you have to respect, you know, the people who are grieving about this death, about this massive national incidents, massive national events, and the immediate response is, why do we have to respect these things when the only thing that we have ever seen from them is negativity? You know, why do the young generation who are currently seeing, and for clarity, I'm American, I'm not completely in tune with British politics, but to my understanding, there is currently, you know, massive wealth inequality, there's currently, like, food shortages, this is currently a very turbulent time for Britain, and the monarchy is living in, you know, giant, massive mansions with literal gold and, you know, a literal crown, and, you know, the younger generation is supposed to be like, well, you know, I might be struggling, the everyday commoner, but, hey, I should at least be respectful of the massively rich, massively powerful.
Yeah. So another thing is that a lot of our generation and like the generation or two before it, a lot of these younger people online do not really care for tradition for tradition's sake, especially when a lot of those traditions were set before like two recessions happened.
Yes.
Like, remember, this is the generation of people that have lived through both the 2008 financial crisis and COVID-19.
Yes.
Like, these people live in a different world than when anything, like, than even when Diana was alive.
Yeah.
And I'll get to Princess Diana a bit later, but I think, like, there are a lot of things that are considered tradition that are not sacred to our generation in young generations these days, because, like you said, we don't see benefits from it, or we are so far removed from their context that it feels just out of date or unimportant. In general, I think the philosophy is to be introspective and be able to take things down for the sake of the future, rather than respecting the existing framework and structure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of the sort of perspective on the royal family follows that they're essentially a tradition.
Yeah.
They are, like, if they don't have political power, then they are ultimately a state-funded, state being the general political term, like, celebrity tradition.
Yeah.
They exist because they had a monarchy, and they still want to have a monarchy. It doesn't really do many monarchy things, and clearly, like, they're not great monarchs if the reception is this mixed. And so it feels really, I don't know, really, really boring to be like, oh, you have to respect the queen's death. And it feels very out of touch in a lot of ways. It feels like it's a sentiment from centuries ago.
Yeah.
That has remained because of some sense of, like, keeping things as they ought to be.
Yeah.
Without really any regard for how that affects people nowadays.
The immediate question that, or the immediate reaction to people being disrespectful has pretty much entirely been, like, how terrible of these people, how rude of these people during this period of national mourning, and not why.
Yeah.
Why do we have an entire generation plus, not to exclude older people, of course, because there's a lot of older people who did not like the queen as well. Why do we have this entire group of people who are so adamantly anti the queen, like anti this establishment, that they are memeing on the death of another person? And the answer is, you know, very clearly, like, a lot of the harm that they have caused, the fact that this generation is not seeing benefit. I want to also specifically say that I say that, I believe I also tweeted this roughly this out as kind of a thesis, but I say this also as a bit of a criticism. Like, this should essentially go both ways, whereby, like, we do not see benefit from the queen, therefore we criticize her death. However, I would also say that if we were living in, like, a, I don't know, a non-9/11, post-9/11 world, for sort of an example, like, I do not think the quote-unquote general culture would have picked up on these specific deaths the same way, because it essentially didn't affect white people. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of the crux, is, like, you know, if I can't think of an immediate example of, like, somebody that the left is going to, the quote-unquote left, is going to mourn that, like, actually did terrible things. But, like, you know, it's this idea of, like, because there are people who are affected by this who are in some position of power, who have some position of privilege, we are allowed to, you know, dislike them, and the general majority is going to say, yeah, that was good. But were things a little bit different? Were there people who were not in as much privilege who were only the real ones affected by this? If Queen Elizabeth really was such a beloved figure among, you know, the younger white generation, for example, I do not think we would have this kind of outpouring if it were really just, you know, like, people of color saying, hey, She presided over the British monarchy during terrible periods of colonialism that was actively happening under her reign. You know, if white kids on Twitter weren't really affected by it, we would not see the exact same amount of outpouring of support against the queen.
Which is unfortunate.
Yes.
That says more about generally who people listen to online.
Yeah.
And again, we're not trying to say that this is like... I'm trying to make sure it's clear that we mean that it is a bad thing that if white people didn't care, there would be less of a fervor.
Yes. Yeah. I want that to be perfectly clear, is like, I am saying this as something of a critique of this outpouring, not because we should respect the queen, but because we only see these kinds of outpourings for people that exclusively also white people hate, for example, or people in positions of
privilege. An example is like McCain. People were pretty chill when McCain died.
Yes.
And that's because white people didn't really care about him.
Yeah.
Or liked him.
Yeah. People, when McCain died, we, like, the general established idea was sort of like, you know, well, he respected a period of, you know, respectability within the Republican Party. So far divorced from the Trump period, and, you know, respectability is nice and all, but when you're in the party that throughout the entirety of the 80s, you know, like...
Yeah, I mean, he ran for president against Obama, and that was, like, right around Bush, George W.
Yeah.
And, like, you can't say that your party was respectable when you had put George W. in office.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, the other thing is... This was, like, in the last few years, we've also had, was it Harry, who kind of wanted to defect from the royal family?
Yes, it was Harry and his wife Meghan?
Yeah.
I think?
I know the wife's name, but not the prince's name. But I think that was such a, like, quote-unquote media circus that was everywhere, that it became more and more clear that the royal family was akin to, like, the Kardashians.
Yeah.
And that they are just a celebrity family. And people get really tired of those nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, when you see something so much, it's hard to actually care about it because it feels like it is an arm of just the media trying to provide drama and news stories you can eat popcorn to.
Yeah, in order to not become the exact people that we just criticized, it should also just be noted, slight sidebar, that a big reason why there was such a focus on Harry and Meghan was because Meghan, this is the couple I'm thinking of, is black, I believe.
I think so. Another big thing, though, is that, like, from what I understand, the queen was awful to them.
Yes.
And that's just another thing on top of why people dislike the queen. It's like, these people didn't really want to be in the public eye so much. And sure, they were still rich, but, like, they didn't want to lord that over people, literally.
Yeah. I'm not saying they are good people, necessarily. I do not know them, and I do not know the harm that they have done, nor the good that they have done.
Yeah.
But I do know that, at the very least, the system they were in tended to exclusively target them because... Harry was a noble, and Meghan was both
a commoner.
Meghan was both a commoner and a black person.
Yeah.
And, like, that is just instant fuel for tabloids to start criticizing her a whole lot more for definitely no reason.
And I mentioned Princess Diana. I was not really aware of things when Princess Diana was alive.
Yeah.
I don't even remember if I was alive, but I don't remember exact year that she died. But, like, I have definitely seen a lot of, like, sort of martyrizing of Princess Diana, and there's definitely evidence of Queen Elizabeth treating her very poorly, kind of abusively. I know there was a huge public support of Diana, and Elizabeth being negative towards Diana. Like, that's another angle of why the public would not like Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Is that they liked Diana. Diana, I know, spoke about the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah.
And that was something that, like, no other politician wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so the queen being so, like, abusive to her is another reason why people would have resentment towards the queen.
Yeah. I know that I've seen, like, a lot of takes on the meme of her dying is essentially, like, her getting to heaven or the other place, and it being, and you know, it being like, oh god, you're here, and then, you know, the doors open and it's Princess Diana. Mm-hmm. And like that, I think that style of like, I think that style is born from both like the older generations who did not like the queen sort of going, this is the bad monarch, this is the good monarch. Do not have context on Princess Diana. Know that she did some cool things. Probably could find some dirt on her.
She had a Beanie Baby that was not as expensive as people think.
Yeah, not going to make a moral judgment on her.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's another thing of, like, the younger generation then picking that up because they don't have 100% context, but they do know Princess Diana was beloved and did do a lot of cool things for somebody who is in that position of power who didn't need to. And so they pick up on, like, the queen is bad because of all of these reasons, but Diana is great because she is a beloved figure. And so, like, the you know, thing that should be picked up on maybe is that by the people who are saying this is so disrespectful is, well, maybe we should look at why Princess Diana is so revered to the point where she has essentially become a secondary aspect of this meme, is like the queen going to meet Princess Diana in the afterlife and getting her shit rocked or whatever.
Does, you know, little Sparta kick off the steps of heaven? Okay, we're serious phases over, I guess?
Yes. Yeah. So, just, you know, I want that to be there. The timestamp is coming up soon, so we're getting all the plebs who didn't want to listen to this. But I just want this to be here as sort of a not necessarily a statement of intent, but just sort of like a more serious analysis of why memes are shaping up to be how they are, especially in the wake of tragedies.
Yeah.
The reason that Queen Elizabeth was immediately memed on is because, like, everybody was sort of expecting the death to happen pretty soon, and we're already kind of gearing up for it as well because of the long history.
Might I make a postulation here?
Absolutely.
Thatcher 2.
Thatcher 2. Yeah.
That this is just Thatcher 2.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's...
People were ready because of Thatcher. They were like, okay, we gotta have something planned this time.
Yeah. I'm even going to make, I guess I'm going to sort of attempt a bit of a future shot here, which I try often and do not succeed in often, but the current PM, to my understanding, is terrible, and a lot of people on the left do not like her at all. She is seemingly just like an absolutely god-awful person and is going to be a god-awful PM. If she is essentially the new face of, you know, the PM of, like, British Parliament for a while, I am willing to bet we are essentially going to get a Thatcher 3 resurrection joke.
Holy shit.
When she dies.
Yeah.
Like, if she is in power long enough that we have a Thatcher-like era with her, we are going to see the exact same thing in 50 years or whatever, where it's like, why are people so mean about this person? And it's like, well, look at the history before you.
Yeah. Okay, so, taking the serious face off.
Yes.
I'm a comedy clown. All right, so Nintendo Direct, really quick rundown. Not going to talk about cottagecore farming stuff because I already mentioned that.
Yep, I'm going to specifically shout out exactly two. One, the new Story of Seasons reboot is actually over a game that I was very interested in. Story of Seasons, is it Friends of Mineraltown is the new one? I believe it's Friends of Mineraltown.
I thought it was It's a Wonderful Life.
No, it's Story of Seasons because... Story of Seasons is essentially the new Harvest Moon by the original developers who could not retain the original Harvest Moon, like, franchise name.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
I thought it was a Resident Evil Biohazard situation.
No. It's a Wonderful Life is, I think, a different series, like, a different series of farm games. But, like, very much in the style as well.
Okay, but what was the subtitle of the GameCube Harvest Moon?
Oh my god, was that It's a Wonderful Life?
It's literally on my GameCube game shelf.
Hang on, have they had a Story of Seasons It's a Wonderful Life?
Can you just, like, walk over to my game shelf and look at the box for Harvest Moon? It might even be on the spine.
This is gonna be some real good audio.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite audio things is to have somebody walk away from the camera.
Wait, you
all
have...
Taizonde style.
Oh my god, you have the Quidditch game?
Oh yeah, I have Quidditch World Cup.
Yo, okay, Quidditch game? Actually fucking baller, though.
Okay.
JK Rowling, terrible.
Yeah.
The Quidditch game, though, pretty good.
Okay. Okay, hold on. JK Rowling's death may be a Thatcher 4.
Oh my goodness. Wait, you can't say that.
I know, but... it's gonna be... Okay, it'll be an Elizabeth 2, not a Thatcher 3. She's an Elizabeth 2, but an LA 0. I'm just riffing. Goodness. I'm just riffing.
Oh, goodness.
Anyways.
Okay. So, New Story of Seasons is a reboot of one that I was actually quite excited about, so I'm looking forward to it. The other one, like Harvestella, looks like Farm Game but sad.
Oh, yeah. It looks like the Yoko Taro Farm Game.
Yeah. It's like run a farm in a dying world and then go on an adventure to try and save it.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm expecting it to be really sad, but God, I actually really want to play it.
The only cottagecore game I've really gotten into, I guess Animal Crossing counts, but it doesn't really have farming. But I was gonna say The Good Life, and it's more so because of the writing and the characters and all that, and not at all the farming and cottagecore mechanics.
Yes.
Like, The Good Life's mystery is fun. I'm not a fan of planting plants.
That's a sweary game, right?
Yeah, it's a sweary game.
Sweary, famous developer of Deadly Premonition.
Yeah.
And which... Deadly Premonition 2, which had a trans character, which was pretty... Eh, but then Sweary straight up came out and was like, we're redoing this. I'm sorry. I wanted this to be a positive representation. I heard your community.
That's
Sweary based as fuck.
That's good, is recognizing that you've done wrong and taking steps to fix it.
Yes.
Oh, that reminds me, by the way, Daisuke Ishiwatari had an interview recently.
Yes.
Where he very specifically said Bridget is a girl and, like, used female pronouns as much as possible, which... In Japanese, you don't often do that in talking in the second person or the third person. So, like, he had to go out of his way to confirm that. Can we just... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Bridget is trans and based, and I know a lot of people who have started playing Guilty Gear competitively because of the representation.
Brisket, my beloved.
Bridget and Testament, they themstament, as
yeah,
I say.
Yeah, yeah. The Old Testament versus the New Testament.
Yeah. My picks from the Direct. So I had this whole text thread that I referenced on my stream the other day, where I went over a bunch of things. I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. For one, Peach Gardens in the Mario Kart DLC.
Yes.
Peach Gardens is a fantastic course. I gave sort of a wish list of courses I would want. I'd still love Maple Treeway, Daisy Cruise. There's another DS one. I guess... DS Bowser's Castle would be good. DS Rainbow Road. Honestly, like, DS and Wii have some incredible course design.
Yes.
But then there was one I don't think I mentioned to you, but IB is going to be on the Switch. And that's wild. I don't know much about IB. So I guess bit of a spoiler for our next spooky month coming up, but... We're going to be talking about Yume Nikki.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be talking about Yume Nikki and also a little bit over its impact on the RPG Maker horror scene.
Yeah.
And, like, IB is one of the products of that, like, boom. And it's wild to me. Okay, it being on the Switch, I'm not exactly terribly surprised about. It being in a Nintendo Direct, I am more than a little surprised about.
Yeah. Yeah, IB is, like, one of the games that kind of came directly inspired by Yume Nikki, and it definitely has more of a plot, if you will, whereas Yume Nikki is a lot more atmospheric, a lot more up to interpretation.
Yeah.
But, IB is definitely talked about in the same breath as Yume Nikki, as, like, you know, a legendary must-play game if you're into that sort of indie J-horror type stuff.
Yeah.
I think for me it's also wild, because that was, like, RPG Maker 2000... And I have to imagine they had to remake the entire game in an engine that could compile to Switch.
So, I know that IB did get a recent remake. So, okay. Like, the remake work had been done. Although, the fact that IB got a remake is also a little bit wild, but... Mm-hmm. here we are.
I mean, Yume Nikki got a sequel.
Yeah, Yume Nikki got a sequel and a, like, official English translation for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I guess we're in the RPG horror renaissance, which I'm super down with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've also got things that are also RPG horror inspired that are getting big, like Lisa. The first Lisa game is essentially a Yume Nikki fan game.
It really is.
There's obviously Undertale takes a lot of influences, same with Everhood. Hylix is actually pretty inspired by that style in a lot of ways, that sort of abstract style. A lot of good games. Omori. Almost forgot Omori.
Extremely
Omori. Omori might take more inspiration from Abe than Yume Nikki, honestly.
Yeah. This is all a lot of the umbrella of, like, Earthbound-inspired indie RPG, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
Which I don't want that to ever become a derogatory term. If I ever catch any of you using that as, like, a serious mark against a game...
Or indie game about depression.
Yes.
Get better material.
Look, I will joke on it every now and again, but in my heart of hearts, I still love all of these games.
People say, like, oh, another indie RPG maker game about depression. I'm like, name three.
Yeah.
Another one. What? There's two now.
Undertale.
Not about depression, but go off.
Undertale 2.
That one's definitely not about depression. I'm pretty sure it's just a shit post.
Anodyne, maybe.
Okay, Anodyne, that's fair. It's also not an RPG.
That's true, yeah. Ib coming to Switch, quite a little bit surprising, but I'm actually super here for it. I might finally pick it up and play it.
Pick it up. The other thing I wanted to bring up was Pikmin 4, obviously.
Yeah.
Finally announced. I'm super excited.
Yeah. Have you played Pikmin?
Yeah.
Do you like Pikmin?
Yeah.
Pikmin nuts off your face. Yeah.
That's good. High five.
Wait.
All right, that's where I'm going to cut the audio. Yeah, Pikmin 4, cool. They're leaning even harder into the whole it's just Earth thing.
Yeah.
Like, Pikmin 1, it sort of hinted at that it's Earth in the very Nintendo way of, like, ooh, but what if there was a secret?
Yeah.
Same thing with Kirby 64's Shiver Star being Earth.
Yeah, you know what? Screw the Disney theory. I want the Nintendo theory that all Nintendo games technically take place in the same universe. And it's all tied together by the fact that this is post-apocalyptic Earth.
Well, yeah, because they all fight each other in Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking of, like, an Inkling accidentally spilling ink on the entirety of, the what's it called? The sunken navel or whatever it's called. Just, like, an entire Pikmin level gets covered in ink.
Oh, no.
Callie steps on a Bulborb.
And, you know, that's a... You shouldn't read that into existence, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people on the internet who would love to be playing Pikmin 4, and then suddenly Callie appears out of nowhere, and her giant foot steps right in front of you.
If you would like to make fan art of Netzer for...
No! So...
Anyways, I also wanted to bring up Rain Code. It looks cool.
Yes.
The way I described it is it looks like Danganronpa, but the Danganronpa guy doesn't want to make Danganronpa anymore, so they made a game like Danganronpa, but not Danganronpa.
Yeah.
Essentially, the guy who writes it wanted to stop with Danganronpa 2, but they were like, no, this is too popular. You need to make another one. And so that's why Danganronpa V3 is so, like, hostile towards the fans. Its theme is basically, the show needs to fucking end. it did. But, like, I like a lot of the ideas in the series. I think if it had a less... if it had a more toned down, less, like, overtly tropey and kind of fucky cast, and if it did a little more fine-tuning on some of the investigation and deduction mechanics, it would be great. I can't recommend Danganronpa to people... because of, like, the cast and the writing and all that. Whereas, like, the actual trials and all that are fine. The nonstop debate is a really cool concept. And, you know, the minigames or whatever. Seesaw effect moment, if you know, you know. But, like, just give me, like, some characters that aren't, like, I don't know.
Is this...
Aren't Mekon.
Is this similar to why...
Teru Yumi? Is that his name? Teru?
Is this similar to why I can't exactly recommend Persona 5 to people? Because yes, there's a couple of moments that make you go, ugh, this is certainly an Atlus product.
Yeah, it's very anime in the worst way.
Yeah, anime derogatory.
Anime derogatory. Weeb derogatory.
Yeah.
Gamer derogatory.
Yeah.
By your powers combined.
I was really interested in CrossCode, and I'm really, really hoping...
Raincode. CrossCode is good.
Damn it.
It has a guy named Apollo who RPs.
Sounds pretty good.
CrossCode's a good game.
I really need to play it.
It's a good action-adventure game. Take it from the person who likes action-adventure games.
But Raincode, I'm really hoping is good.
Yeah. Because
that was one of the very few that, like, really stood out to me of, like, oh, that looks pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
I think besides Zelda, which was the other big thing...
Oh, yeah.
I think that the other one that I was really... So, unfortunately, the other thing that got me really excited, which I think is probably a good sign of the fact that the Direct was a little underwhelming, is all of the Nintendo Switch Online 64 games.
That's what I was going to mention. For one thing, GoldenEye coming back is huge.
Yes!
Like, if that has online multiplayer, it's going to be really funny to watch content.
Oh, my God.
But also just local multiplayer. It's, like, the local multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's one of the games that really popularized couch local multiplayer. I think, like, so it took something that was kind of inaccessible, which is LAN parties, which was the main way to do local multiplayer for shooters before it, and made it accessible so people just had to have one system with one copy of the game and controllers.
Yeah.
It also kind of set a lot of design standards for console FPSs.
It's a little wild. Like, I guess it's not that wild that it's coming, because it is such a massive, important, influential piece that's probably still fun to play couch co-op in. But I do also know that it hasn't aged well in the, like, pure mechanical sense.
It's iconic, though.
Yeah.
It's definitely, like, maybe the most iconic non-Nintendo game other than, like, Banjo-Kazooie
yeah.
on the console. It's one of the most iconic licensed games. It was almost in Smash Bros.
Oh my god, that I didn't know.
Yeah, so I want to say it's the landmine. You know the landmine in Melee? If you view the trophy for it, its description and origin are top secret. That's because that was supposed to be from GoldenEye.
Okay,
but
that's
I guess
good.
They pulled out at the last minute.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that a lot.
So yeah, that's how important it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a pretty big deal. I'm more excited though for Mario Parties 1 through 3.
Yes.
They showed Mario Party 1 and I was like, okay, sure, they'll probably do 2. Because I believe the Wii U had only 1 and 2 on its virtual console.
Yeah.
And then they showed 2 and I was like, okay, cool, I can finally play 2. I haven't played 2 before. And then it showed 3 and I was like, oh!
Yeah.
That's it. That's my shit. That's my jam. I hope they have netplay for 3 so we can do dual mode netplay.
Yes!
I'm like, yes! 1v1 me in dual mode.
I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast, but, like, you specifically have wanted to create, like, a professional dual mode bracket.
Yes.
For a while.
Dual mode is a real game, and, like, it's fine as it is in the base game. I think if you modded it to, like, change a few mechanics, it would be perfect.
Yeah.
But as it is, like, you could run a dual mode tournament.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's 15 minutes, or no, 15 turns, basically the lowest turn amount. 2 out of 3 games, or tiebreaker, based on, I guess, who had the most coins. And then you rock, paper, scissors for character pick. And whoever picks the character second gets first ban and then stage pick.
Yeah.
Because they ban a stage, first player gets to ban a stage, and then second player picks a stage.
Yeah.
And then counter picks are 1 ban, 1 stage, no DSR.
So if
anyone wants to scribe that onto, like, a clay tablet.
This is not a joke. We need to make this a real league.
Yes.
This would be amazing.
Yes. If we, if it does come to netplay, expect the NetSurfer Pro dual mode tournament.
Yes. Oh my god, yes. Oh, I'm so here for it. So, we have that. Then we also have, like, a lot of just really kind of fun, interesting picks. Pilot Wings 64.
Mm-hmm.
Oh god. I've suddenly Pokemon forgotten
Stadium
all of them.
1 and 2.
Yes.
That's really
yeah.
big. I love Pokemon Stadium 2. I still have my copy. It might it's probably over there. It has the recognizable golden cartridge.
Ooh.
Great game. It doesn't have let you import Pokemon, which doesn't surprise me, because you would specifically need Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, and Gold, Silver, Crystal data.
And you would also need to somehow have a controller that connects to the Switch, but also lets you put...
I mean, it's different from, like, the 3DS letting you use Gold, Silver, Crystal save data from the eShop version of those games and connecting that to Pokemon Home.
Yeah.
There's a reason why most Pokemon games only let you transfer up instead of back down.
Now, I'm going to put on a bit of a conspiracy theorist hat, because I know that a semi-common thing that people think might be happening is, like, Game Boy games coming to Switch, like Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games coming to Switch Online, similar to the NES, SNES, N64 games. So, I'm willing to bet if that did happen, there would be a cross thing whereby you could take Pokemon from your Nintendo Switch Online Game Boy games and then use them in the N64 version of Stadium. I want this to happen. This probably is never going to happen, but I would kill for this.
Yeah, that's a lot of conditional ifs.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I'm a really bad coder. It's all just like nested ifs to yeah. infinity.
It's like the VVVVVV source code.
So
that's a very obscure reference. Only three people will get. Much like
one of them is currently on this podcast.
Much like the Atopiary reference I made when we watched the Sonic Frontiers trailer. No, and then. I mean, Pokemon Stadium 2 has great minigames. Stadium 1 has a few bangers, like the Lickitung one and the Clefairy one.
Fairy.
That's the one.
Yep.
But then it has, like, Magikarp Jump. It has the Drowsy one. It has the Ekans Ring Toss that never works. But Pokemon Stadium 2 has bangers, except for, like, the Counting one, which is almost impossible to lose, unless you're bad at counting.
Well, I am bad at counting.
Okay, but it does have some of the best ones, so there's that. Face me in the Hitman Top arena. Oh god, but oh my god, if they have net play for mini games, I would hate to do the Scyther cut on net play.
Is it like extremely time oriented?
Yeah.
Oh boy,
Scyther cut with delay sounds like actual pain.
Oh, last thing also, Zelda, by the way, in the Direct. I'm excited, probably going to get it. We don't have information, and I think I'm past my days of, like, looking at, you know, the single glider and going, oh, I wonder what that mechanic's going to be. I'm a little old for that. I'm just, at this point, I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to, you know, look at that, go cool, and then pick it up whenever it comes out, and if it's a cool mechanic, it's a cool mechanic.
Yo, but that shit went up.
That shit do go up, though. I think this is why they, like, not why, but I think they remade Skyward Sword specifically so that people would have it fresh enough in their minds so that when they have cool Skyward Sword references
yeah.
in the new one.
Yeah. I'm excited for Skyward Sword references. Anytime Zelda games acknowledge the continuity, I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
This is my jam.
Breath of the Wild was explicitly made to essentially tie the timelines together, because the idea is that feasibly every timeline becomes Breath of the Wild. So, like, technically the timelines would still be quote-unquote separate, but all of the events of Breath of the Wild would just happen in all of them.
Yeah.
Which is some, like, Marvel-level fucking, like, timeline shenanigans that I...
That's that Homestuck shit.
God, yeah. But I'm excited for New Zelda. Okay, if you can put one N64 game on Nintendo Switch N64, what is it?
Probably, I don't think they have Banjo-Tooie yet.
They don't.
That one would be great. My answer's gotta be Chameleon Twist.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Which
that's
also does choice. Have local multiplayer. It's a good game. I feel like there's probably so many others I'm forgetting.
I'm thinking either Snowboard Kids 2.
That's a good one.
Or, as a meme answer, Superman 64.
That's a good one. I have a copy of that one as well.
Yep, it's never going to get played.
Mm-hmm.
We will never... this is how you know we're not How Did This Get Played? Or Get Played, I think it goes by nowadays. I shouldn't use the podcast's dead name. But we, you know that we're not that podcast because we have bad games that we're never going to play.
Yeah, but I did play like 7 hours of Shadow the Hedgehog.
That's true. That's very true.
So it all evens out.
Instead of playing Superman 64, I just played Balan Wonderworld twice.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, about the same amount of fun.
Damn.
Yeah, we got them Tims, though. yeah, we're in the fragmentization stage of the episode.
Yes.
Much like Hyrule?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess Hyrule is sort of fragment. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing dehydrated Ganon.
Except we're not tears of the kingdom, we're tears of the serfdom? Wait a minute.
Wait, hang on. Welcome back to Net King-er Pro? King Surfer Pro!
King Surfer Pro.
If we ever play, like, Crusader Kings 3 together, that's what it's gonna be.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's been this episode.
Yeah.
You can follow us on any podcasting platform you want on, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, whatever. You can give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review, let us know what we've done wrong, let us know what we've done right, let us know how we can do right by you, and by that I mean let us know what you'd like us to cover in the future. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro. Where you can also tweet things like that and get updates on our new episodes. And also in the form of little emoji riddle teasers. Yes. A little riddle.
Just a little riddle.
Mm-hmm.
We're also not Hey Riddle Riddle.
True. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Twackaroo, new Twitter at.
Yes.
That's T-W-A-K-A-R-O-O, Twackaroo. Where you can get my tweets on updates on all the stuff I'm doing, all my projects and different stuff here and there. You can get a fun time. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. Stream schedule has been kind of inconsistent, especially because I've been dog sitting for my neighbor. But I stream a lot of roguelites, a lot of competitive games. A few single-player games. I'm going to be streaming Pikmin 1 and maybe Pikmin 2. I was already planning on streaming Pikmin 1 sometime, but since they announced Pikmin 4, I figure it's a good idea. I've been playing through Cult of the Lamb. I've been playing some of the new TFT set. So check that out.
You can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWilson0N. I post my hot takes and videos of my cat sometimes. I had a pretty banger tweet recently with regards to an NPR article, which was very fun. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where one of these days I will upload a video. But more importantly, you can find me on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire, where I might have a little project in the works to actually start streaming more regularly.
Hey.
I might be currently commissioning somebody to make a picture that you guys might be seeing if you follow me on Twitch.
A bit of a tube-shaped picture, if you will.
Yes. Yes. In something of a V formation.
Mm-hmm. V formation! Tube powers! Activate! Turns into, like, an anime cat girl.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
This has been your Talk Surfer Show, Play Splatoon 3.
Play Splatoon 3. And, don't... You know what? Just don't.
Just don't. That's the advice this week.
That's our regular advice column, as we always do. Yes. Goodbye.